You may not know it, but today is National Good Neighbor Day. Did you know that, Dave?
I knew it.
Okay. Well, anyway, now our listeners know it too. We wanted to find out more about what National Good Neighbor Day is and how we can all learn to be better neighbors to each other. Joining us to help us out with that is Jay Waljasper, a Minneapolis-based writer with a special and long-standing interest in the attributes of thriving communities. Welcome, Jay.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well. And you?
Good, good. Happy Good Neighbor Day.
Yeah, thanks. You too. So can you tell us, for our listeners, a little bit of the history of National Good Neighbor Day?
Yeah, it's been around for quite a while. It was kind of founded in 1978, and actually it's found in the early 1970s in a place called Lakeside, Montana. And the founder, I don't know if she's still alive, or someone named Becky Matson. And it was just the idea that, you know, neighborhoods and neighbors are a really important part of our lives that often don't get a lot of attention. And just something to kind of celebrate neighbors, what they do for you, and to sort of, you know, just make everybody think maybe twice about what they could do to be more neighborly. So, and it's not, I don't think it's yet a well-known holiday, but, and there's other holidays that sort of do something similar. Here in Minneapolis, we have a big celebration the first Tuesday of August in quite a few neighborhoods, quite a few blocks, where we'll have a block party. It's sponsored by the police department as a way for just to get neighbors to know one another, which helps make a neighborhood safer, but also makes it, you know, more fun and more interesting.
And that's the National Night Out, right?
National Night Out, yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's, I think that's just another version of, you know, of a Good Neighbor Day.
But my understanding is President Carter even signed a proclamation.
Yeah, a proclamation in 1978.
Amazing.
And, yeah. And so anyway, yeah, so it's just, you know, I think it's a nice reminder because, you know, I mean, you know, everybody in one way or another lives in a neighborhood. And I think we sometimes just overlook all of the things that a neighborhood, you know, gives us. You know, I mean, it's like when you're, you know, when you're away from home and you're worried that you left the stove on, you call your neighbor. You know, when you're out of town and they see the papers piling up on your porch and you know, they put them on your porch. And, you know, just that, you know, that simple kind of thing. It's great to have friends, great to have family. But the people that live in that close proximity to you are a big part of your life, too.
Yeah.
They'll watch your cat. They'll watch your dog. They'll, you know, keep an eye on your property.
And what other things do you think are some of the things that make for a good neighborhood?
Well, you know, I think a neighborhood, I wrote a book called The Great Neighborhood Book, and it was really just a collection of stories from, you know, cities, suburbs, small towns, rural areas all across the country. There's people, but just people coming together in a neighborhood and what they're able to achieve. And so pouring over these really, you know, hundreds of stories about people, I kind of drew a few conclusions about what makes a really good neighborhood. You know, and the first thing is, people need a place to come together, you know, because you don't often get invited to someone's house who you don't really know very well. But, you know, you get to know that person. You know, it can be in a coffee shop. It can be in a tavern. It could be in the grocery store. It could be on kind of the sidewalk or the road in front of your house. But just a place where people can kind of feel safe to have a conversation with someone they don't know well. You know, and that's where friendships are born. That's where, you know, romances are born. That's where good neighbors are born. So that's an important thing, just giving people really a public space for them to come together. And, you know, another really great thing to boost neighborhood pride and neighborhood connection is places where people can walk together. You know, whether it's a sidewalk, whether it's just the road that people like to walk up and down. You know, it's a park. It's just a business district like downtown Grand Marais. Just places like that where people can kind of bump into each other. Because, like I said, you have your friends, you have your loved ones, but there's a whole other sphere that makes up a sense of community. And those are the people that, you know, you don't know real well, and maybe you really wouldn't want to invite them over for dinner for 3 hours, but to have a five-minute conversation, you know, while you're standing in the checkout line at the grocery store or something like that, you know. And that's what strengthens communities. When people know each other, then they have, you know, when there's a crisis or an opportunity, they already know each other. And so they can begin working together. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. You can actually begin working together right there. And, you know, when people are connected, you know, great things can happen in the community.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, including on remote rural highways, even, like up
yeah,
here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where people go out for a walk and suddenly discover that other people go out for a walk along the road, too. I met several people that way. I live in a very rural area of Cook County. Anyway,
yeah.
So.
Well, even if you live, you know, if you live in a rural enough place, you know, you can both, you know, stop and have a conversation in your cars in the middle of the road. I mean, that's a little bit harder to do, you know, in the middle of Nicollet Avenue in Minneapolis or on Highway 61. But
yeah.
But anyway, just, you know, it's just, you know, as human beings, we just really evolved to, you know, connect with other people.
Yeah.
And it's remarkable, you know, isolation. You know, medical studies just show isolation is really terrible for your health, and it's terrible for your community health as well. And so, you know, we're social creatures, and we need more opportunities to kind of be able to, you know, show that off.
Mm-hmm. Even the introverts.
Introverts, you know, introverts love to have conversations too. They're just a little more tired afterwards.
Right. Or they just want it with fewer people at the same time. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Other qualities you can think of good neighbors or good neighborhoods?
Well, good neighbors, I would say are inclusive. You know, it's just not the people that have a lot in common, but they kind of look out, you know, for that older person in the neighborhood that maybe doesn't get out much, but, you know, you might kind of say, oh boy, you know, their house is the paint's kind of chipping on it. Maybe we could pitch in and, you know, paint the house or something like that. So just including everybody, you know, I think that's a big thing, because if it's just you and your cool kid friends, then that's not really a sense of community. That's just sort of a, you know, a little tribe in your community. And just really, you know, sharing a meal together is, I think, probably the single best way to instill a great sense of kinship among people. You know, because we're relaxed, usually if the food is good, we're having fun. And so people might lower their guard a little more than they would ordinarily. And, you know, and might share a little bit more of themselves. And, you know, so a deeper bond of friendship can be created. Yeah, and that can happen, you know, you know, at a tavern, that can happen in a coffee shop too. But just when people are relaxed, they're sort of not looking at their watch and thinking, boy, you know, I got to pick up the kid at daycare and then I got to swing by the hardware store before it closes, that kind of stuff. But when people are a little bit laid back, then they're just a little bit more open and bigger things happen. You know, it's funny. I was up talking in Grand Marais, I think it was about a year and a half ago. And it was all about the plans for Highway 61.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people in the community had some questions and some concerns about that. And I was really amazed just how many people, you know, one was in the morning and one was in the evening. It was, you know, a weeknight. Just how many people from the greater Grand Marais area showed up, you know, to ask questions and hear me talk a little bit about how to, you know, make a busy street more walkable. And so I think there's a real strong sense, it's a word that the sociologists use called social capital. And social capital is a lot like, you know, capital is money, which makes things happen. The social capital is sort of a non-money way to make things happen when people get together. And I'm just always amazed, because I study this quite a bit in different spots around the country, but what people are able to achieve, you know, in the absence of having a lot of political clout, or a lot of money, when they just kind of put their heads together, sit around the kitchen table and think about, you know, how we're going to solve this problem. I think that the Grand Marais area seems to be pretty rich in social capital.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think even expanded much beyond Grand Marais to the surrounding communities and all of Cook County as well, that, yeah, people really are concerned about preserving the really good things that we have here and how do we avoid having them separated by things like a highway that, you know, has a lot of traffic moving through. So, you know, how do you keep the town together, the two sides of the town on the highway or any of the communities along the highway?
Exactly. Yeah. Because a highway can be like a really big divide in a community. You know, people, you know, this is, you know, and And it's just not any much fun to cross the highway when you have those big trucks from Thunder Bay, you know, rattling through your town.
Exactly. Those big lumber trucks, you know, it's going to take them time to stop. So.
yeah, exactly. You know, so, yeah, in any case. And so, but I think that, you know, I would, you know, from the time I've been to Grand Marais, you know, quite a few times, as most people from Minneapolis have, you know, but I've been there in the winter too. I'd say there is a real strong civic sensibility in that part of the state. And, you know, and that's, you know, that comes out of a certain sense of neighborliness. I think there's probably people that say, well, I don't really live in a neighborhood because I live in a rural area. But, you know, it's just a different kind of neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, if someone's house is on fire, there's the people there, you know, going to call the, you know, 911 and, you know, do what they can to help and see, get everybody out of the house and things like that. I mean, just, you know, we're kind of wired to take care of each other. There's been a lot of thinking recently about the whole notion of the selfish gene and how, you know, humans are at their best when they're competitive with one another. And, you know, but, you know, we're just as much, even, in fact, the scientific studies prove that, you know, we are more wired to cooperate than we are to compete. Yeah, it's fun to compete. But, you know, basically, how did our ancestors, you know, manage to make it through cold winters and, you know, with no tools and no anything else? It was because they were able to, you know, there were strength in numbers, and they were able to kind of, you know, they weren't things alone. So,
yeah. For our listeners, you're listening to The Roadhouse right now. We're talking with Jay Waljasper, who's talking about National Good Neighbor Day and the things that make good neighbors and neighborhoods. Jay, you've also described and written about Jacobsburg, which kind of a composite that you described of the qualities that you appreciate. Yeah. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and how it informs your values?
It's one of the most fun things I ever wrote. But I did this book called The Great Neighborhood Book. And, you know, coming out of all of that, I just, you know, you write a book like that and people are going to keep asking you, what's the best neighborhood in America? What's the best neighborhood in the world? And I didn't have a ready answer for that, you know, because there were sort of great qualities in a lot of neighborhoods that I looked into. And so I decided to have a little fun. And so I wrote a column sort of describing it. And I didn't, you know, it was a little bit of, you know, I didn't tell people right away that it was a composite. I just said, you know, Jacobsburg is the, you know, the best neighborhood in America. And then just sort of started describing it. And it's a city neighborhood, but I think it kind of fits pretty well. But it's, you know, if I just told the story, there was a, you know, in Jacobsburg, there was a, you know, there's a sushi restaurant that's across the street from the biggest Sandbelt dealer in the state. And then there's a fancy, you know, and then there's a soul barbecue place that's down the street that was once mentioned in a famous R&B song. So I just did all these kind of playful things and talked about how people like to hang out in the park and how, there'd been really bad traffic on a street and a couple people had been killed in a very short amount of time. And so the neighbors rallied to make that street a safer street. And I just kind of went on and on and on. And then I finally started saying, you know, as I mentioned in this interview, I sort of said, well, you know, and some of the best thing about Jacobsburg is it has a lot of really good bars where everybody gathers. And I started describing these bars and I said, it reminded me of a description I once read by George Orwell about his favorite pub in all of England. And then I said, of course, Orwell's pub was actually a composite of all these different pubs, qualities he liked in them. And that's the same with Jacobsburg. But, you know, but it's fun. And some people read it and they, you know, they send me an email. Well, what, you never said where Jacobsburg was? You know, so I don't think they're reading it very closely. Yeah. But it was just, you know, it's just a kind of an experiment in imagination. But it just really... Again, it was a place that, it was a way of, I studied creative writing when I was in college, and the cardinal rule of creative writing is to show, don't tell. So that's what I was trying to do with Jacobsburg. I was just to kind of give people like a picture in their mind of what a great neighborhood looks like. And it was just, it was a lot of fun. It was the most fun thing I think I've ever written.
Sure, and it sounds like something that kind of connects with what you described more systematically about describing great neighborhoods, which has to do with,
absolutely.
You know, locations where people can gather. An inclusiveness of spirit, and making a point of connecting with each other. So,
Yeah, no, exactly.
Any final thoughts about how we might better incorporate some of these properties or values into rural areas such as Cook County?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because I've done some writing recently about, you know, rural walkability, because people sort of say, well, you know, walking, well, that's kind of a city thing. But I was really impressed. I went down to just on the other the Minnesota's south border, down in Iowa, a place called Decorah. You know, it's really hilly, beautiful. They call it Little Switzerland there. And Decorah, there's been a big push there. Iowa has a big initiative to try to make Iowa the country's most healthy state. And so a big push there has been about walking. And so people in that area kind of seized the idea. And they did some really cool stuff. Like they made, particularly for schools, one of their big focuses. So they did a lot of walking school buses, you know, which is just like a school bus, except for there's not a school bus. Mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, you know, a parent will serve as a driver.
Yeah.
And so they did these amazing kind of walking school buses in these small towns. And sometimes even the families that live out in the country, you know, either the bus or they'll drive them in town and they'll join the school bus from the edge of town and walk in like that.
Yeah.
And then there was this one place, you know, and again, it's a problem, I think, throughout rural America with where do they build a school? Well, they build it in the middle of a cornfield or a pine forest or something in between both towns. So no one can really walk there. But there's these two towns that were the schools right in the middle of them. They actually made it sort of a walking biking path so that quite a few of the kids, you know, at least in the nice weather, you know, could walk and bike to school. It was like 3/4 of a mile from one town and, you know, like 1.5 miles to the other town. But, you know, it kind of went along the creek and then went along the side of the road and then cut through, you know, a pasture and things like that. But, you know, so there's, you know, there's no reason why people in small towns and rural areas can't walk as much as people in cities. And in fact, if you look at the census data where they keep track of how much people walk, it turns out that people in small towns walk almost as much as people in cities, you know, because some of the deterrence to walking in the city, a long distance, you know, maybe fear of crime a little bit or fear of you know, too much traffic or something like that, those are often missing. You know, you don't have those in a small town.
Yeah.
So, and I found quite a few towns around the country, Albert Lea, Minnesota is one, Batesville, Arkansas, that are doing big, big pushes to make themselves more walkable.
I like it.
And yeah.
I like it. So, and then, of course, yeah, people need to just identify too what their meeting places are, as you mentioned before, and it can just be
exactly
in the grocery store or the coffee shop or the gas station that everybody gathers at. So this is
there's
really
a great custom we could learn. There's a lot of things we could probably learn from Italians. But there's a great custom that they have in Italian small towns and cities both. It's I'll butcher the word, but it's something like passeggiato. And basically, it's just a strolling route that, you know, that is always the same. And people just kind of walk around it, you know. And, you know, you might walk around it one time or two times or three times. And it's just where people, it's kind of what they do after dinner in these towns. Huh. And so the whole community is there. It becomes kind of a, you know, like a circular town square. And if people kind of walk the same route, then, you know, then you run into your friends and, you know, or if there's someone you really wanted to meet and you kind of didn't get the nerve the first time, maybe you catch them on the second lap or something like that. But I think it'd be really easy in a place like Grand Marais just to say, okay, you know, starting at 7 o'clock, you know, maybe different, you know, 5 o'clock in the summertime, wintertime, you know, just here's the strolling route and everyone can kind of go out and stroll it, you know, and it'd be just, it'd be like what going to the mall was for suburban kids in the 1980s.
Yeah, well,
but
that's
it's just where you run into your friends.
That's a very interesting thought. So we've been talking with Jay Waljasper, who's here to help us celebrate National Good Neighbor Day. Jay, thank you so much for joining us. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us today?
You know, I just think that I just want to reaffirm that there's no reason why people that live in small towns can't walk as much or more as people everywhere else.
Yeah.
And that walking is where the sense of community, you know, arises.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Oh, sure.
And have a good weekend.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.